So it really is like, it just is evil Coleslaw. It's like Coleslaw with a goatee. It's all
Hello there, ladies and gentlemen of the internet, and welcome to this amazing podcast with yours truly.
Beautiful. Amazing.
For a cynic, you sort of know how to talk.
I just really like getting up really close to my mic so you can just, you know, really taste the plastic windshield, you know.
The proximity effect.
Yeah.
I want to be able to smell my own breath when I speak.
I was on the stream with Dopex yesterday, and he put this whole mic in his mouth. That was exciting. Is there any podcast that entire ASMR?
Okay, Dopex, calm down.
Sorry.
The windshield's too big for my mouth. I've tried it several times. It's just not happening.
Wait, what?
No, that's okay. We don't judge you based on your mic swallowing skills. Anyway, yeah, we're here with Cynical Reviews. This is the first podcast, not the second, not the third. All right, it's the first one.
We were here arguably first.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't...
Not even arguably, we were just here first.
I can't prove otherwise.
I started a Google Keep recently, and I wanted to, like...
A what?
A Google Keep is like a note-keeping app on your phone.
Oh, okay. Oh. Okay.
And, like, so I wanted to take notes for the podcast, like, things to bring up and stuff, and I only have one note. And it's the fact that, okay, so apparently, so you know how there's coleslaw?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
Okay, so I found out that apparently there's a real name called Bolslaw. Like, a lot of people are actually named this.
Evil coleslaw.
With, like, a B. I'm not even joking.
Like, what, in what country?
Yeah, what does that mean?
Okay, because I found this out because I was looking up, I'm going to butcher this pronunciation, but Wojtek, it was this bear. It was part of like the Polish army at one point. And
I'm sure.
Apparently he was trained by this guy named Bolslaw. And so I guess it's a Polish name. And I looked it up, and, like, this has to be like a very, this has to be an unusual name or something. But apparently it's very popular to be named Bolslaw in Eastern Europe.
Oh. Interesting.
So it really is like, it just is evil Coleslaw. It's like Coleslaw with a goatee.
Yeah, exactly. Coleslaw from the darkest timeline.
Wait, so Bolslaw isn't food? It's just some dude, right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's not food, it's a dude.
Oh,
no, okay. It's coleslaw with vodka in it.
Can it's you just, imagine? Yeah, it's just Mike's hard coleslaw.
Ew.
You go to like a party. There's no alcohol. It's just bowls of coleslaw.
Someone in the chat at discord.t1podcast.com, if you want to tune to these episodes live, says it's actually pronounced Wojtek.
Oh. Come on down to the fun town.
I like Wojtek. Sounds like some kind of like dance.
It sounds like a futuristic.
Wojtek sounds like something that's from like it's like a cyberpunk thing, but it's like kind of like B movie.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, it's like a futuristic.
It sounds like an evil corporation.
Right.
Yeah.
Cyber Wojtek.
And they would like try and harness like the evil aliens' power, and then just kill like hundreds of their own private militia in the process.
What do we? How do we get here?
That's the only note I took was Bolslaw is a real name. So
the rest of the podcast is off the rails.
Yeah.
We're officially in off the rails territory. It's been about 3 minutes.
Yeah, thanks for that, Lars.
Mm-hmm. Be honest, you only brought that up so that we would spend 3 minutes talking about something without swearing, right?
Actually, that wasn't my intention, but that was actually a good strategy. Unintentionally.
Yeah, it was. Because I did think twice about swearing.
It's hard to get vulgar when you're talking about coleslaw.
Yeah, you want to test that?
Sure.
All right. Yes. Are we allowed to swear now?
No, it's not.
Yeah. I think we're past the watershed.
All right.
Mommy, can I swear?
I want to stick my motherfucking dick in a bowl of coleslaw. Get that shit pregnant. Name the child Bolslaw.
Which like typical side dish would be the best to stick your dick in? Probably like mashed potato, right?
Depends how hot it is.
Oh.
Yeah.
boiling. I'd say boiling mashed potatoes.
It's like if you overheat that stuff, not speaking from experience, of course.
I was about to ask, have you done this before?
Of course not. No, but okay. you ever go on like
dicking with Babish over here?
You ever go on like deep Reddit rabbit holes where you're just you just find a new subreddit and you sort by top of all time and you just go down it and spend like hours.
I love it.
Yeah. So there's a particular subreddit called "Don't Stick Your Dick in That," which, based on this conversation, I think you guys might enjoy.
Yeah, I have been on that. That is actually a really good one. I was thinking of "Don't Stick Your Dick in Crazy." That's a slightly different one, but that one you're talking about is.
Well, I think
good.
That counts.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well,
wait. So hold on. I want to know more about this. So this subreddit, they just post pictures of things you don't want to put your penis in.
Yeah. So it's like.
Or you do want to put your penis in.
Well, no, that you shouldn't put your penis in, but like look like you can't. So it's things that you can, but you shouldn't. You know, like a crack in a wall, or like a fleshlight that's been tied to an exhaust pipe, or sometimes a crazy ex-girlfriend.
Or your mom, am I right, fellas?
Got him!
That fleshlight on the exhaust is honestly one of the funniest videos on YouTube.
Yeah, that should never make.
It's funnier than it has any right to be.
Like, every time I see that, I'm like, I can't make anything as funny as that. It actually really hurts me.
Okay, so let's not make the official podcast mistake of like talking about the guest like 0% of the time. CJ, can you tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do?
I don't know, man. Fleshlight exhaust pipes are pretty fascinating. Anyway, no, hello. So, right. My name's CJ. I have a channel on YouTube called Cynical Reviews, and I make videos about like movies mostly, but also TV shows when I feel inclined. And they're reviews, but they're for the purposes of jokes. So if you like a bit of analysis mixed in with dumb jokes and like angry humor, yeah, it might be your sort of thing.
Yeah, went ahead and watched a couple of those before recording, and in particular, I checked out the Tall Girl review, and I also checked out the Holmes and Watson, which, like, I know that it's kind of been said to death, but I feel like. If you had an award for, I guess maybe the way that I would put it is the most unnecessary movie of all time. I think that'd probably be in like the top 10 at least. Like there's something about that movie that like it's not even just that it's bad. It's that its existence pisses me off. You know what I mean?
Okay. CJ, could you explain to me? Because I have not seen Holmes and Watson. I
lucky you.
I value my time, and I saw the reviews, and I made an effort not to watch it. But Step Brothers is like one of my favorite movies of all time. That is such a funny movie. So, like when I first heard about like Holmes and Watson, I was like, the concept of that, if it's like Step Brothers, would be awesome.
Well,
well, obviously that is not what transpired. But what specifically makes it like a cut above other bad movies?
All right. Well, if you want a one-line summary as an indication of how bad it is, Sony tried to sell the rights to the movie to Netflix, and Netflix turned them down. Netflix, of all people.
Netflix, yeah.
For once, they had standards.
Damn.
Okay, all right. So, to sum it up, you could make a parody of Sherlock Holmes. It's not impossible. But the problem is the way they did it is by having Holmes and Watson just act like total morons in a way that's not even funny. It's very crass. There's a lot of like, well, for example, there's a bit where they just eat onions for some reason, and then they overly react to eating onions. There's a lot of very cringy jokes. There's a whole sequence that goes on for like 3 minutes where they think they've killed Queen Victoria and they have to hide her body. But then she's not actually dead and it serves no purpose to anything. It's very, like, it's kind of difficult to explain succinctly why the humor in that movie doesn't work, but basically it doesn't work. They also do really, you know the whole, like, Orange Man Bad meme? I don't necessarily mind, like, movies and stuff making Trump, like, make Trump jokes, that's fine, but, like, the way that they did it was extremely lazy and unsubtle, and it just felt like they were trying to say to the audience, "Oh, hey, we hate Trump too, huh? We're funny." You know, like kind of the Saturday Night Live comedy formula.
Right.
It's just bad. You're not missing out by not having seen it. Which is a shame because Will Ferrell is and can be extremely funny, but not in this.
Yeah, both of them can be. Like,
they had so many actors in it. Like, Ralph Fiennes was in it, but he was only in it for like 2 or 3 minutes. He was completely wasted. You had Steve Coogan, who was in it, who did an interview after the fact, and he was like, yeah, I haven't seen the movie. I think in 5 years' time, people are still going to say it's rubbish. And he admitted he only did it for the money. So it's one of those kind of projects where they were just like, oh yeah, you're a friend of ours. Let's bring you on for like a cameo, you know.
Mm.
There's no merit to it. It just has nothing going for it.
Right.
I saw it in the cinema when it came out. God, I paid full price for it. And there were like 4 people in the theater. Oof. And nobody was laughing throughout the entire movie except this one guy in the front row who was like, at like every single stupid fucking joke. Every single joke, this guy was laughing like a moron. It's like, yeah, that's the movie. That's who this movie was made for. Those are the only people that can enjoy it. You get
people with head injuries.
Yeah, kind of. If you like the taste of window cleaner,
go on.
You'll like Holmes and Watson.
It honestly just seems like they're just trying to capitalize on Step Brothers' success. Like, oh, people like this movie.
That's a bit of that.
Yeah.
Isn't it a little bit late to capitalize on that though? Like, that was. What, 10 years ago at this point?
Still, well, I think it's more like they go, oh, it's Will Ferrell and, oh God, what's the other guy's name again?
John C. Reilly. See, I had to look it up.
They're a good duo. Things they've been in have made money before. They're a good bet. So we'll allow them to do this project. And then it turned out the way it did.
John C. Reilly is, on Tim and Eric is like the funniest shit.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's so interesting to see in the range.
I think maybe the point here is that, you know, you have these actors that have the certain strengths and certain weaknesses that are really being misused here.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Oh,
hey, can we go back to talk about movie theater etiquette?
Before like we do that, I want to bring up like a really super dorky point.
Oh my God.
Oh, Lars.
You're in a safe place here.
Oh, Lars, what have you done?
What?
Go ahead, Lars.
That reaction did not match what I said at all. What are you guys talking about?
I'm so confused.
I don't know. Go ahead.
Okay, so it turns out, and just a note for like the 99% of people who won't know this, it's actually not Ralph Fiennes. It's Welsh. It's actually pronounced Rafe, which is like fucked up.
I've never heard it pronounced that way.
That is
Yeah, it's true. Oh, Rafe. It's really weird.
Legends.
It's like back in the day when people, like, if you only read the news online, you would think it was Robert Mueller as opposed to Robert Mueller. It's like a very strange pronunciation.
Oh, sure. Yeah, there's so many people like all these American politicians that, yeah, have names like that. And I don't watch American news, obviously, because I don't live in America. So I just see these articles pop up, and then one day I'll see a clip on Twitter where someone actually pronounces their name, and I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
like right? Ted Cruz, for example. Did you know that Ted Cruz, his name is actually pronounced Zodiac Killer?
Oh,
yeah.
It was so obvious all along.
He actually owned that kind of recently, didn't he?
Well, a couple years ago, but yeah. Like, he played in the joke for 5 minutes.
Okay, so I know that this meme has been going around for a long time, and I'm going to admit right here that I never understood it. Who is the Zodiac Killer? What is that? And why? What does Ted Cruz have to do with it?
So,
I never asked because I was scared.
I'm going to let the guests take this because I want to give them a chance to talk.
Okay, so Zodiac Killer was a serial killer who basically went around shooting people in California back in the 70s. They never identified him, and he basically sent a bunch of notes to the police and the press, and he sent ciphers. He sent 4 of them, only one of which has been deciphered, but recently they deciphered another one. He was never caught. They never worked out his identity. And when they worked out the new cipher, it was just him messing with the police and being like, you'll never catch me. But they did. Yeah. Some of his victims survived, and they gave, you know, like, what do you call it, composite sketches of the killer. And people thought that it looked like Ted Cruz. So that's where the meme came from. But it couldn't have been him, because he would have been like 8 years old or something at the time.
Well,
right. It's funny to think about.
Well, like, it still could have been.
Never say never.
It's a toddler running around with a fucking pistol.
That kid had big ambitions. Starting young.
Didn't people then say it was his dad or something? Because then that, like, the timeline lines up.
Dad Cruz. Yeah.
Oh.
Dad
Cruz. Bullslaw Cruz.
Bullslaw Cruz.
I'm on a mission.
It's my great uncle, Bullslaw Cruz. I don't know why I gave him the accent.
Imagine carrying a child for 9 months and then being and then allowing it to be called Bolslaw.
Yeah. Well, I feel like that's the kind of name that you give like an unwanted child. You know what yeah. I mean?
Like, what was that? The fucking Seed of Chucky or whatever. What did he name him? Do you remember that movie?
Bolslaw.
It was like his name was like Shit Stain or like Shit Ass. Oh, shit. What was his name? It was like something really Sweet. Fucked. It was like Chucky's son, Chucky the doll. I don't remember.
His name is Gentle Glenn.
Oh yeah, that's it. Yeah, his name was Glenn. Gentle Glenn.
Oh, you were really close, Dope.
Oh, what was it?
Gentle Glenn. No, I'm looking at Seed of Chucky on Wikipedia right now.
Wait, is it? It's not Gentle Glenn.
Glenn is also a name that you give your child if you don't like them.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
I've always got a fear. Don't worry. None of us are called Glenn, I don't think. But I've always got that fear that I'm going to say some shit like that, and then someone in the chat will be like, "Dude, that's my name."
Yeah, if we have any bull slaws in the chat, I would like to just humbly apologize for all the shit we've been talking on your name.
I wouldn't.
I don't. Nah, okay. Actually, I'm doubling down.
All right.
This podcast is officially an anti-bull slaw podcast. We're taking
that stance. Fuck bull slaws. All the bull slaws around the world, y'all can suck our dicks. Because we're a podcast with attitude.
We're the first anti-bull slaw pro MRA podcast.
Wow. Anyway, moving right along.
Yeah.
Hey, well, I tried to bring up a topic earlier, and then Lars shot me down to bring up.
I didn't shoot you down. I said I had a quick note.
He kind of did, though. He kind of sandbagged in there.
5 minutes later. Let's continue. Let's go. Bring up your shit.
Talk about movie theater etiquette, because this is something that, well, hasn't vexed me in about 8 months. But before, back when I could still go to the theater.
What's a movie theater?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think they're like a really big living room where some dude gets on Netflix and just puts some shit on. But boy howdy, I used to get furious every time I went to the theaters here, especially since I moved to Melbourne, because I'm used to smaller places back in New Zealand where just there's less people, so there's statistically less of a chance for anyone to be a massive dick. But boy howdy, you come here and people just like everyone's on their phone, people are just talking. One guy was just recording the movie once. That was weird. With like his kids there. I don't know. It was very bizarre. Do you guys have any stories of especially bad people in theaters?
God, it's been so long since I've been to a movie theater that it's like kind of hard to remember.
You know what?
I don't really have anything.
You know what the last movie I saw in a theater was? The Sonic what? Movie.
Sonic?
Oh, really?
Oh.
Yeah, that's how long.
Oh, so and you went to a movie theater right as the pandemic hit.
Pretty much. Well, this was VidCon in London back in January. I went with some other YouTubers. We were just like, oh, yeah, let's go see the Sonic movie because it's out. And then, like, half of us fell asleep. So, yeah.
Well, that's a bit, I guess those 12 months since then, got to go fast.
But aside from that guy who was, you know, laughing like a moron at every joke in Holmes and Watson, oh, no, actually, no, I do have another one. I went to see, you know, the Inbetweeners movie?
Yeah. Which one?
The sequel, one?
There's a
actually.
Couple of them.
The one where they go to Australia.
But
Inbetweeners.
Yeah, they're such shit, but they're fun.
In fact, no, sorry, no, it was the first movie. So I went to see it in the cinema with my friends, and I hadn't seen it before, and sat behind us was this row of dumb bitches who had seen the movie before, and they were, throughout the entire movie, were going, oh, this is when he does this. Oh, he's about to do this. Oh, it's so cute.
Fuck
throughout
them.
The entire fucking movie. Do you have any That's idea fun. How frustrating that was?
That is infuriating.
I can imagine.
And I should have just turned around and told him to shut the fuck up, but I was young and horny and I didn't want to say anything, but now I know better.
Oh, yeah. Maybe if I sit really quietly in front of them, they will give me a kiss.
Well, it's that very British thing of like sitting there with your arms crossed, glaring, in order to express your disapproval, being too awkward to actually do anything about it.
Right.
No, I do that as well. Absolutely. Yeah, like if someone behind me keeps talking, I'll like you'd whip your neck around really quick to kind of because you still don't want to say anything, but you want to be like, I see you and I hear you. And it almost never works.
Yeah. I've actually found some joy in life in just actually just embracing it and just yelling at them if they do something. Like, oh, wow. It is very pleasant and cathartic. Like, if someone's doing something douchey in the theater, just be like, shut the fuck up. Like, yeah. Usually they do, because they're so, like, they're not prepared
taking a bit
for someone to be like, yeah, what? They're actually going to hold me responsible for my choices? And they usually stop.
Yeah, but I feel like you're just disrupting other people.
Well, you're being disrupted for 1 second versus this person who's being like,
oh yeah,
mildly disruptive for the entire time.
Like, if someone's
time.
Like tying their shoe too loudly, I'm not going to like cuss them out. But like, if it's a pervasive problem over several minutes or something, then yeah.
Right. I mean, you could just slash their tires after the movie.
Yeah.
The worst I ever had, which I just, since talking about this, remembered, I can't remember what movie it was, but it was like, it wasn't a comedy, but it was something that had like comedy bits in it, probably like a Marvel movie or something like that, you know?
Right.
And I sat next to this big fucking idiot who was there with his girlfriend, like, or some chick, I suppose. And the entire time when there was like a joke on the screen, he would then like add his own jokes onto it.
Or
like,
oh, he would, no.
Like, he would say like what the punchline should have been said or whatever. Like, he wasn't saying it super loud, but I was sitting right next to him and I could hear it. And I was like, this guy's a fucking idiot. And they weren't funny either.
Oh. That
sucked.
That kind of reminds me. Have you guys ever heard of Who Killed Captain Alex?
Yes. No. Love that movie.
No.
Okay. So, Captain Alex.
That's like the South African movie, right? Or not South Africa.
Yeah, it's from Uganda.
Yeah. That. Oh, yeah. That.
And it's like, the thing about it is just like, it's like this Z-tier action movie. But they have something which we don't have in America or in the UK or in Australia or in New Zealand, or I think that's everyone's locations.
Yeah.
So they have this thing called the Video Joker, which is that, like,
oh yeah,
in addition to the action, there's like this DJ guy who's like making jokes as like voiceover in the background.
It's like a hype man for movies.
Yeah, exactly. It's so unusual to me. Like, if you watch it, you're just like, what the fuck is going on? But apparently that's the thing over there.
Just some dude like roasting the movie live.
Kraken wise.
It definitely adds to the experience, especially awesome. In that case.
Yeah.
Like, half of the comedy is just the guy reacting to it. Like, this woman tries to hug this politician and he's like, no, I prefer men. She's like, what? That's a great movie, but like, it's on YouTube, I think.
This is correct. Check the show notes for the link.
Because I think the guy uploaded it to YouTube just for free. It cost $85 to make the whole thing, and you've got to admire their spirit.
Oh yeah, honestly, a lot of like those kinds of movies that like come out of like Uganda or Africa, like, unironically, those guys make like really funny shit, because like a lot of it is just, it's so like out of tune, like with what we're used to, like in our media, with like, you know, like their special effects, and like everything just makes no sense whatsoever, but it's just like, it's just a ride.
But you can tell that these guys are more passionate about what they make than like billion-dollar studios, and it really does come across. Like, even with the lower budget and the technical, you know, limitations, yeah, that they have, they still manage to create something like out of love and something very entertaining, like, and also batshit insane.
Yeah.
And then you've got a billion-dollar studio that makes horrific, boring messes like Wonder Woman 84.
Batman versus
Superman. I'd rather watch Who Killed Captain Alex 100 times than Wonder Woman 84 again.
Yeah.
Sure. That's a good review.
Well, that's kind of the thing. It's like the bad movie with the passion versus the supposedly supposed to be good movie that's, you know, dead in the water.
Just not.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I respect passion that goes into movie. Like The Room, for example, like, it's a terrible movie, but you can tell that he was passionate about it. So you could kind of like, you can give him kudos for that, you know?
Many kudos.
Oh, that's why you can't like, you know, you see, even though you see people like almost trying to like bait out like it's so bad it's a good movie, and it's like
you can't bait it.
It has to be, it has to be genuine.
That's it's the difference between The Room and everything that Tommy Wiseau has done since. It's when you try to deliberately make something so bad it's good, you will inevitably fail.
Yeah,
because what makes it so bad that it's good is the fact that it wasn't trying. Like, it's unintentional. Yeah. You laugh at it.
Yeah.
But when you're effectively trying to get us to laugh with it, then it's like, yeah. Like Sharknado movies and stuff, like, I just don't, they don't do anything for me, because they're just trying to be shit, you know. And it's like, yeah, I don't know.
Samurai Cop 2.
Or Samurai Cop 2. Yeah.
Samurai Cop was amazing because it was like one of those so bad it's good movies. And Samurai Cop 2 was just like, oh, well, let's do that again. And it was just trash.
Yeah.
You see, they recently made a sequel to Shark Boy and Lava Girl.
I did see that. Yeah.
Which I've not seen.
I heard that. Yeah, I haven't seen
but
it.
But talking about like most pointless movies, that one's got to be high up there, right?
Yeah.
Weird movie.
How come they didn't get Shark Boy? Is he not acting anymore? Taylor Lautner or whatever?
Taylor Lautner. He's probably a bit too big for that kind of thing these days.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Maybe he isn't acting anymore. I don't think I've seen him in anything since Twilight.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good point, actually. Have a look.
He took all his Twilight money and just ran. They'll set you up for a very long time.
Well, that's true. He's been in like four movies since Twilight. He's in a TV show, but no, he's not really done anything for the past 2 years.
Yeah,
sure.
What's interesting about Twilight is it's kind of got this thing where the main stars have been surprisingly successful at separating themselves from it. Mm. Like you'd think that Twilight would follow them to the ends of the earth. But Robert Pattinson has done a lot. He's done a lot of really good stuff. And, you know, Kristen Stewart has evolved way past her role in Twilight at this point. So
I think Robert Pattinson, he did years working like really small sort of indie gigs just to like build his street cred back up.
He hates Twilight as much as anybody. Like he's had to work really hard for people to not immediately associate him with Twilight. But he is a really good actor.
Yeah.
He's amazing.
He started off his career on the wrong foot, basically. And he knows it, but I have mad respect for him.
Mad respect.
Yeah. No, he seems like a chill dude, like a genuinely like interesting guy, which is, you feel bad, when all these people were hating on Twilight back in the day and hating on him and everything, and it's like, fuck, he probably was thinking the
Did
same thing.
Did you guys
thing.
Hear about that story where, because you know like some celebrities, actors and stuff have stalkers?
I was literally telling my girlfriend about this last night.
He had like a woman that was stalking him, like madly in love with him and stuff. So he was like, okay. So he like said, all right, come and hang out with me then. And so he hung out with her, but he was like such a miserable bore that it turned her off.
I've heard of that.
Yeah, I heard about that. Like he just spent the entire time just complaining about everything wrong in his life. And she was like, fuck this.
Amazing.
That's a really interesting gambit, and I would never try it myself, but...
Well, it's a gambit and a gamble, because what if, like, she doesn't care? She's like, oh, I'm okay with this, and then just, like, makes it worse.
What you realize from my limited experience meeting, YouTubers, big YouTubers in the flesh, is you find very quickly that they are just people. Like, you have this really built-up impression or idea of them, and you meet them, and you're like, oh, it's just some dude. And then on top of that, they can also be very boring people. So if you were like, oh, Robert Pattinson's this god, he's this amazing person, all this shit, and then you meet him, and in 5 minutes, you're like, oh, he's a guy. And then half an hour later, he just spent the entire time whinging and being a boring person. You'd be like, oh, he's also boring as hell. That would probably kill your lady boner, no matter how, like, you know...
Oh, yeah.
How much you're a creeper. Mm.
I think Ben Affleck is a good example of that.
Really?
Just with how many photos they take of him, just looking absolutely miserable, getting his Dunkin' Donuts coffee.
Oh, yeah.
I saw that recently. I felt pretty bad for him because, like, obviously he's lost some weight, and it's kind of like at that point where it's somewhere between this guy's just healthy and skinny versus, like, this guy has a serious addiction problem. And a lot of people have been clowning on him for that. I kind of feel bad for him.
Right. Ben, if you're listening to this, we're here for you, man. You can call us.
Come on the podcast, I'll buy you a cheeseburger. We'll call it that.
See, he's kind of become the new sad Keanu.
Yeah. I know.
Yeah, he has.
Keanu kind of rebranded himself as slightly happier.
Slightly.
Slightly.
I do get like this melancholy vibe through every single thing he ever says and does.
He's quite an introverted, like, insular guy, and he's had quite a sad life, honestly. Like, he's had some really, like, fucked up stuff happen in his life, which is why the sad Keanu meme, like, with him sitting on the bench and stuff, he was in a really bad place then. But again, someone I have mad respect for, because, like, even when the cameras are off, he's, like, a genuinely good, nice guy. There's so many stories about him,
being nice
to fans. Do you see, like, he poses with, like, women fans, but he'll, like, hover hand? Because he's, like, he doesn't want to, you know, he's that respectful, you know.
Yeah.
But
he doesn't want to.
But he's
lawsuit.
The only man that can do that and still look cool.
Yeah, 100%. If anything, it makes you look cooler. Like, I don't need to touch this woman.
Someone should do one of those Photoshops where, like, you know, these sweaty nerds Photoshop, like, Lugia. Like, but they're, like, still hover-handing them. Someone should do that, but with a Keanu Reeves picture.
Hey, CJ.
Yes?
So, just to get to something a little bit serious here for once, I think it'd be cool to kind of talk about the history of cynical reviews. Because it's an interesting history, because you started off with a certain kind of format, then pretty quickly shifted to another one, and it seems like this is where you found your quote-unquote mainstream success on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like it, if possible, if you could kind of walk us through your journey as a YouTuber, and just anything like interesting along the way, any nuggets we can take away from that.
Any nuggets? Well, how self-deprecating do you want me to get?
Well, you're British, entirely. So I'm assuming it's going to be like fully torqued self-deprecation.
Oh, yeah.
So
it's going to be very, very self-deprecating, very dry, and very sardonic, which is most of my humor, actually. But okay, so I mean, at the beginning, so YouTube is something I first thought about doing back in like 2013, and goddamn, I wish I'd started back then. You have no idea.
Oh man, I feel that all the time.
But yeah. I never had the confidence. So it wasn't until like near January 2018 when I finally decided, okay, why not? I'm going to give it a go, because I've been watching YouTube for like, you know, I started watching YouTube in about like 2008. So I thought, well, why not have a go? And I was going to do the channel with a friend of mine, and it was going to be called What's Wrong With? And it was basically going to be like commentary style videos just complaining about different topics. Very original idea, I know. And I was going to do all the scripting and recording, and he was going to do all the editing. We were going to do it together, but basically he ended up not doing any of it. So I ended up just doing all of it myself. Made a few videos. I talked about the Tide Pod Challenge, if you guys remember that.
Mm-hmm.
Height of Human Stupidity.
Said, unfortunately.
A bunch of other videos that, like, you know, the one on Pugs, the one on Goop, Raw Water, like a bunch of ones that when I released, they you know, I had like 30 subscribers. They didn't do that well, but it's weird to think that now some of those have millions of views. And then I decided kind of as a whim, because I like Braveheart and I like history, but like the movie Braveheart is really, really inaccurate, and I thought to just take the piss out of it. So I did a two-part video doing that. And then I thought, why not combine my usual video format with the, you know, because I liked watching reviews of bad movies, because I really enjoy that kind of content. You know, people like, you know, IHE, YMS, Ralph, Movie Maker. Mm-hmm. Also people like Angry Video Game Nerd, Angry Joe, that sort of thing. So I thought I could branch out and do that as well. So then I covered Food Fight, and then I sort of mixed in commentary with like film stuff. And then I first got put on the radar because I did a response to a guy called Patrick Willems did a video called Shut Up About Plot Holes. And his point in that video was basically that plot holes aren't valid criticism and that you should stop talking about them. And that if you care about that stuff, his quote was, you're watching movies wrong.
I'm already pissed off just hearing about that.
So I did a response. Yeah. I did a response to it. He kind of came across a bit of a dick, and then I did that as well, kind of back. So I responded to that, and that got me a little bit of notice. Then on a whim, like, I was watching Sierra Burgess as a Loser with my sister on Netflix, and I thought, this film is shit and it has a really bad message, and videos on it were getting a lot of views. So at this point, I'd basically given up on my channel ever getting big. So I just thought, oh, what the hell, why not? Made a video on it, and then for whatever reason, that video took off, blew up, and then I went from about 120 subscribers to the end of the month, I was on 40,000.
Wow. Man,
it was pretty mad.
Hong Kong.
And then I doubled down with like more movie-based videos. Kissing Booth is another big one. And I have tried to vary up the sort of videos that I do, but one of the most requested ones that I get are the Netflix like teen garbage, which I kind of understand. And I do, you know, I do make those videos occasionally, but I also want to do other stuff. In terms of nuggets, I'm not sure what you mean. What do you mean by that exactly?
Well, I'm just saying like
chicken nuggets.
One of the things that we kind of talk about on the show is just like, by a nugget, I guess, maybe vague advice or things that you wish you had known in the beginning.
Sure.
Or just any little things that you can give to the audience. Like, we have a lot of people who listen to us who I call junior content creators.
Sure.
On their way. They're working to grow their channel, or they're working to you know, increase their podcast audience. Just stuff that you've picked up on, I would say.
Mm. So you definitely have to find a balance between like what you want to make versus what other people want to see. Because you can pour, and because this has happened to me, I've poured a lot of effort into certain videos because I really wanted to make them, and then I released them and they kind of bomb because my audience isn't interested in them, which is kind of heartbreaking, and it kind of takes a lot of the joy out of making it. Well, one thing I've decided to do this year is to more focus on not necessarily chasing what's trending, but like keeping an eye on what people are talking about, what people want to hear about. So like, you know, Wonder Woman 84, for example, which I'm currently making a review on. I'm making a video that's sort of tangentially related to Cyberpunk 2077. I'm going to cover a movie that I've been requested a bunch of times to cover. I've also got the Mulan video that I was going to make last year, but then basically last year I kept falling into periods of like depression and burnout and having to kind of fight through that in order to make content.
I feel that so hard.
I'm in a pretty good place now, but like one thing you've got to do as well is you've got to notice when that's happening and work on ways to try and get out of it. So I'm a very slow learner, unfortunately. But as I've gone along, I've worked out certain things that I can do in order to keep making progress and keep moving forward. So like I used to be of the mindset of like, I've got to focus on this one video and one stage at a time. And if I'm not progressing, then I feel bad and I can't get anything done. So like I have to do the script, then I have to do all the voiceover, and then I have to do all the editing.
Yeah.
But I find that recording audio has been very frustrating for me, and that's something that I've been placing a lot of emphasis on recently, is trying to get better at that. So I won't be recording much at a time, which means I get very frustrated. Now what I've learned to do is record what's called a placeholder, where you literally just read out the script, don't care about how it sounds.
Ah.
You can then put that into your video editing software and then edit to that. Then once you've recorded a good version of your voiceover, you can put that in and re-edit the video to suit that. So that's what I do now. It helps me have something to do rather than get into this point of like, oh, I need to get this done, but I've only recorded like a minute of it and my voice is packed in, and so now I can't do anymore. So you've got to do stuff like that.
That's you and me have both come to the exact same like conclusion accidentally, because I also started doing that, just doing like a scratch recording, not giving a fuck about it, just say it. And it's also good as well, because then you hearing it and trying to edit to that, you realize where the faults are.
Yeah.
And like, oh, this part here doesn't sound right, or oh, the editing, the imagery for this isn't going to work out or whatever. Versus if you spend ages doing the perfect takes and then you don't want to take them out because they were good takes.
Yeah.
But if it's just a scratch recording, you're like, oh, whatever, I'm not tied to it. It took me 2 minutes to record.
I would never have thought of that. That is a really good idea for a script-based channel. That is a fantastic idea.
It's good as well if you're like, for like me having to record, and you're doing this as well now, CJ, but I don't know how you go about, when you film your face, how you go about like doing your lines, if you have it on a screen off to the side or if you just try and memorize it. I've always tried to memorize it so that I'm not like looking away from my camera. But doing the scratch recording is good because you listen through it so many times before you even get to film. So it's already kind of like in your brain, you know, you've already heard the line like 30 times by the time you come to actually film. Mm. So it's a lot less of like having to read through the script again and being like, okay, what's my line here? Okay, this is, you know, it's just there.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much.
They also say that's a good way to write scripts too. It's to just like get your thoughts out on like whatever you're writing on and then go back and basically redo it later.
Well, like for example, with the Wonder Woman 84 script, I sat down and I was like, how the fuck am I going to write this? Because the problem is, it's such a mess. There's so much to talk about, and a lot of the problems influence each other. Yeah. So you talk about one thing, but then that raises up, oh, but this and this and this and this. So like separating out those facts, but then putting them in the script in a way that you can sort of make it flow from start to finish. Like each section feels like a natural progression from the previous one. It's not easy. And I wanted to have the script done on Wednesday, and it's now Sunday. Last night, I did like a second draft of it, and I don't think I'm going to look at it again for like a couple of days while I focus on this other video I'm doing. But yeah, just brain farts is what you got to do. Just like literally vomit your words onto a page, then organize and redraft it later, because trying to write the perfect script from the get-go is something that only very, very, very few people are able to do. Yeah. And there's actually no shame in doing it. I have to script everything. Like, I have to write the whole script from start to finish with all the, like, the jokes and cutaways and whatnot. I change things as I go, but then I sort of write it into the script. I don't get people who can just do bullet points and then, like, talk into the mic.
Yeah.
Yeah, I always wondered that too.
Same like, here. They improv dialogue. I couldn't do that. I can't do that. Like, I have to know what I'm going to say before I go to the mic.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Different strokes for different folks, you know.
Yeah.
Do you think as well, I was just going to say quickly, like, going to what you're saying about, like, you know, falling into a slump, especially with quarantine and everything that's happening around the world right now to really kill people's motivation. Do you find as well what can help is just not being too hard on yourself or realizing that, productivity isn't a competition. You know, it's like, okay, I didn't do anything today.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's fine. That's okay. Tomorrow will be better. You know, it can be really easy to get down on yourself and be like, fuck, I'm not doing anything and I'm wasting my time and my channel's going to die and everything. And it's like, just
yeah,
take it easy.
It's literally me every waking second.
It's like, it's a personality trait I've had for as long as I can remember, really. But the problem is that getting that way makes you feel worse and then it becomes like a spiral. Because then the worse you feel, the less productive you're going to be.
Yeah.
So, yeah, realizing it's not a competition, you need to set goals for yourself, but, like, realistic goals. And one, I saw this advice on Reddit. I didn't come up with this myself. But somebody, and this is advice for depression, really, but it also works in this context, is just make sure you don't have any 0 days. What that means is don't have any days where you do nothing. So even if it's the most simple, basic goal, like open up the video editor and put in your assets or write a word of the script or whatever, you've at least done something, because then you feel better than having done nothing at all.
Yeah.
So try doing that definitely helps. And yeah, just realizing, like, at the end of the day, how much does it really matter? Like, you're beating yourself up more than you should. You care about these things more than other people do. I beat myself up about my voiceover all the time, but I never hear complaints about it from other people, like, ever. Nobody's ever complained about it.
Yeah.
It's all me, you know?
That's interesting that you'd say that, because sometimes I'll find myself feeling super unmotivated, and I'll do the thing that you just suggested about 0 days, where I'll literally just open up Audition and put in all the audio tracks to put into the mixdown. And then when I do that, I'll find myself thinking, like, well, you know what? I should edit for 5 minutes. And then it's like, oh, well, while I'm here, I might as well edit for half an hour. Yeah. And then I find that just doing the bare minimum to get myself out of zero often helps to just, like, get right back into productivity.
Yes.
Like, it works.
Yes. I've often found that even just starting helps, because I sit down and I'm like, oh my God, how am I going to start? And then I end up not starting. But, like, for example, Wonder Woman 84 script, I was like, okay, I'll just start putting words down. And then the act of putting words down in whatever order they came out of my brain, then I had the incentive to write more and, like, re-edit what I did. Same with editing, actually. Like, I struggle to begin editing. So what I've learned to do is basically just get the audio, you know, voiceover track in the Vegas Pro, and then just put clips, a couple of clips over the voiceover. And then you look at it and you go, those aren't the right clips. I should use different ones. So then you get the other ones. Then you go, okay, now I've done that. Maybe I should do this bit. And so on. So just the act of putting a clip on the timeline can stimulate me enough to then keep me going. And when I go, I've worked, like, sometimes 18 hours straight editing.
Man.
When I'm in the zone, you know, but it's getting there.
And also too,
it's that idea of, Dopex, you go. I think you've earned it.
Oh, thank you.
Fight for it.
Thank you.
Fight for
thank
it.
Thank you.
No, we don't fight here. We only love Dopex.
And we only kiss. I was just going to say that I think, especially now, like, what I've noticed just in general with, obviously, the state of the world and how we're living through a fiery heat death of the universe, and just everything's, like, so crazy, you know, like, especially if you spend a lot of time on Twitter or just, like, on social media in general, it's very easy to get distracted, especially, and this is just kind of for everybody, you know, anybody listening, if you have any sort of, like, creative endeavor that you're working on or any sort of, like, outlet that you use, it's very easy to get distracted. I mean, even if you just, like, if you have two monitors and you, like, look at one monitor and, like, something's happening, something new is happening, it's very easy to like stop doing what you want to do just to spend hours on Twitter looking at what's happening in the world. And like, I've noticed that I do that and it's very fucking annoying. So that, it was just like a quick sidebar. Like, you know, it was just aside from like not being productive and not getting shit done.
Yeah.
It's a lot harder right now, especially. So, you know, any sort of tips and tricks, how to's, fucking 360 ollie nose flips to get creative. It's gonna be a lot harder, you know. I hope that made sense.
Doom scrolling is really bad for productivity. Yeah. I do not recommend it at all. I'd recommend, like, if you have to get shit done, just stay off social media entirely.
Yeah.
You don't have to delete it all or anything, but just like, right, I'm not gonna go on it. Maybe wear a rubber band or something and like, you know, whack yourself with it every time you want to go on Twitter.
What's worse for me?
It's like a dog.
I started using this thing called the Pomodoro method, which you can look up online, but essentially it's like you split your work up into 25-minute intervals. So you work for 25 minutes and then you have a 5-minute break. And every fourth one is like a 15-minute break instead. Anyway, it's all on the website. It kind of works in two ways. One, it helps you break all your work down to 25-minute chunks, which makes it so much more manageable. You're like, because you can look at your work for the day and be like, God damn, I've got so much, especially if it's something open-ended like editing or script writing where theoretically there's no end to it. You know, you could just keep doing it forever and ever. So that kind of puts a lid on it. And the other thing is I found that all I needed was just the smallest amount of motivation not to check Twitter or not to do this, because 25 minutes is not a long time to not check Twitter. You know, it's like, okay, I can wait 25 minutes to see what's up or to check my messages or whatever. And you realize you miss nothing in that time period. So yeah, literally just having that timer on my second screen, like 25 minutes, and, you know, work away editing, doing script running or whatever. And you might start feeling like, oh, I want to check Twitter 15 minutes in. And it's like, oh, I just have to wait 10 more minutes and then I'm allowing myself to check Twitter. And what you realize is like, two or three minutes into your break, you've checked everything and you're like, well, I want to work again now. So you get the opposite effect where like you're excited to work as opposed to excited to check social media. So that's personally worked for me. Maybe that might work for some of you listeners as well. Check it out.
Yeah. Fuck social media.
Yeah. Fuck it.
Yeah.
It is not great. No, it's not great.
So bad.
Especially like these days when so much of it is negative. So I'd recommend just not even touching it until you've done what you need to do for the day. Same with like Reddit as well, because it's very tempting to just like go on a scroll. Oh fuck, it's 2 a.m. Yeah. What am I doing with my life? You know.
Yeah.
So doing something, no matter how small it is better than doing nothing, and it will make you feel better. So that's something that I've tried to internalize as much as I can, but it's been a slow process because I consider myself to be a bit of an idiot. Because it takes me a long time to actually get out of these habits and to learn these things. But at the same time, it's not a competition. You know, who's keeping track? Right.
Yeah, exactly.
I am.
You got to do what's best for you, you know.
It can also, you might not even 100%. Realize how bad you are. You know, like there's every times during middle of quarantine where I was like, I feel fine. And then I'm just have no motivation to do anything or you know, and it sort of makes you feel like, well, what's wrong with me? I feel fine. I don't feel, you know. You think of depression as like, I'm sad. It's not that. You don't realize until you look back later. It was like,
takes different forms. Yeah.
Yeah. I think there's going to be this interesting thing when we look back on this time in history where it's like, obviously there's chronic depression and then there's situational depression. And I think there's kind of going to almost be like this colloquially third version of it, which is 2020 depression.
Bullslaw. Yeah.
And it's
2020 to 2023 depression.
Yeah, but what's interesting is, and like just
depression
to kind of get into
two,
it, electric boogaloo. I'm curious if you guys have any 2021 strategies, because I do. I'm trying some things right now.
Smoke weed.
Oh, you're done. Okay.
Yeah.
Frequent.
No, don't
smoke
do that.
Smoke hella weed.
Frequent copious masturbation.
Yes, that's actually really good for you, I found.
What else am I going to do in quarantine? Although, in all seriousness, it does, at least for us guys, it helps reduce the risk of prostate cancer. So, you know, I'm not wrong.
Have you been on Reddit/r/gooncaves?
No, no, but what do I want to know?
Not really.
Is it like
I don't want to know.
Is it like cum jars and stuff?
No.
Oh, no. No.
Okay. It's like, have you heard of the fetish of I don't even know what it's called, but it's like the porn addiction fetish where dudes like succumb to their porn addiction.
Isn't it called gooning?
I think it's called gooning, but I don't know how common like that phrasing is. That is what it's called on Reddit, though. It's people who are like have a legitimate addiction to porn, but they're like, they then turn that into a fetish, which I guess is it's like the snake eating itself sort of thing.
The Ouroboros of masturbation.
Yeah. But they have these goon caves, and it's their porn watching setup, and they'll show videos of it, and they've not videos.
Oh, is it like shitty battle stations except for coming?
Yes, no, exactly that. So there's like
it's like rate my setup, but for jerking off.
Yeah, exactly.
And they'll be like, here's my 6-screen setup, all playing different porn videos, and then here's like my room with every wall is covered in posters.
Yeah,
of porn.
You can't even see their wall. It's just like eagle spreads and.
It's always like
assholes.
A POV shot of them with their fucking crooked dick, like in the foreground. It's,
yeah.
It's a very funny subreddit.
And they're completely naked. They're completely naked. That's the funniest part.
It's kind of sad, but it's fascinating.
I'm looking at it now. This is just a bit sad, really.
There's some where it's like, here's me and my bro jerking off together. And it's like,
yeah.
Also, yeah, this is why people have more than one monitor. Okay.
Yeah.
My other favorite is this one, dude. He's like, here's my personal gooning setup. I like on the go goon setup where it's like a backpack, like a grab, what do you call it?
Like an emergency pack.
Like an emergency pack. If he needs to on the go, he's got everything he needs to goon wherever. It's that's sweet.
Gooning on the go.
So anyway, get into gooning. That's my 2021 strategy.
Do you guys have any like unironic ideas?
Oh,
yeah. Copious frequent masturbation.
Oh, okay. So I'm trying something right now.
That
are you trying gooning
later.
Right now?
Maybe later. But so right now I'm trying to do that thing where it's like they write Onion articles about the douchebag who does this kind of stuff. Where it's like I'm eating healthy, I'm not drinking, I'm getting there's that car. I'm getting a lot of exercise every day. I'm trying to get a good night's sleep and everything, and I'm finding that it's actually been pretty successful. Like, if you don't treat your body like shit, that does help. And I know that's super basic to say, but really easy to forget that, like, you can actually be nice to yourself.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
No, it's true. That is the first step, is just taking care of yourself. So, okay, unironic now.
Yeah.
One thing that I've kind of decided to do more firmly with myself this year is, okay, if I have something that I need to do, like laundry, or, you know, if it's tidying up my room or putting up a poster, changing a light bulb, whatever it is, I'll do it then and there or quickly, so that I don't end up with a situation where I'm like, oh no, I have all these things to do, and I feel worse because I haven't done them, and I feel worse because, like, I haven't showered in a few days or whatever, because then you just feel worse. Whereas if you, like, one thing I've started doing, and I don't do this all the time, but I write a list of things to do in the day, even if it's just really mundane stuff. So, like, shower, eat, go for a walk, tidy room, put laundry on, whatever, in addition to YouTube-related stuff, so that I can say, okay, even if I wasn't that productive YouTube-wise, I've taken care of this other stuff in my life that I need to do, and it makes me feel like I'm not neglecting myself or my family or my friends or whatever. And just make time to do that stuff, and that will make you feel better in general, and I think more likely to be productive elsewhere.
I like that.
Yeah, I agree with that entirely. That's sort of, not to shill this Pomodoro thing again, but because I said you break it up into tasks, I also do that, and that helps so much, because, again, I think you alluded to it earlier, but almost anything can be done in under 20 minutes, like any sort of those tasks you mentioned, like, I'll do your washing, have a shower, whatever.
Right.
So, and 20 minutes is nothing. Like, that's such a small commitment that you can just tell yourself, right, 20 minutes maximum, and this will be done. So using that method, or even not using that method, just saying to yourself, 20 minutes to do this. And again, it'll probably only take, like, laundry takes, what, like 3 minutes to throw in and put the shit on. But if you just say, hey, that's it, we're easy. And then if you quicker than 20 minutes, then there you go. Now you got all this time left to do something else.
I'll just kind of put it out there because, like, I'm kind of trying to make this the year of Lars for myself. If you're someone in the audience right now who's listening, either at discord.t1podcast.com if you want to tune these episodes live, or if you're listening or watching to the cutdown version on YouTube or on audio platforms, if you're trying to get out of the 2020 funk, just send me a DM. I'm T1podcast on Twitter. I'll give you some ideas. I'm working on stuff. You can work on stuff too.
If you're an attractive woman, especially, Lars loves it when...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Lars loves it when he can...
I mean, yeah, that's always a plus. I'm not going to deny it.
Lars is the call me Carson of this podcast. Call me Larson.
Call me Larson. Ooh.
Too soon.
Not yeah, soon enough. Don't message me unless you're 18 or older. Just at all.
Yeah. One of my things for 2021, and I kind of like went through like my YouTube channel, and like I've kind of had like a moment of like self-realization that like when I started being creative or whatever, you know, I feel like I had like these, is the term delusions of grandeur? What does that mean?
So delusions of grandeur is actually like a psychological issue where you genuinely believe that you're like a king or something.
That's dope. Okay. Well, here's that, well, but if that. It was real, if it wasn't a delusion, though, that's dope. Yeah. He is a king.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
He's a good creator, though, so
yeah,
it's not a delusion.
Oh, well, thank you. You boys are too sweet.
It's like if you had a channel that had, like, 2 subscribers, but you acted like you were... Like, you see it in... Do you guys know the YouTubers subreddit?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I've heard of it.
Before I found some success, I frequented those subreddits, and those are awful.
I that's actually one of the better ones, I will say. There is a lot of good advice on there, but there is also a lot of terrible advice. And you quite often get people who, like, they've hit 100 subscribers or whatever, and then they think that they know everything, and they think they're hot shit, and they give everybody advice. It's like, you've been making content for 5 years, and you've only got 100 subscribers. You're not really... I don't want to be an asshole about it, but like, you're not really in a position to be giving, you know, pretending that you're a success. You know,
that's just being realistic.
Yeah. So I'd say that's delusion of grandeur, you know.
Oh, okay.
It kind of reminds me of another subreddit called r/podcasting, which is kind of the equivalent where it's like a lot of, I don't want to trash on people too much, but it's like a lot of low level podcasts that have like 2 listeners, and they're like, well, this is what I did to achieve great success this month. Yes. This is not very useful. And
I'm on this.
I mean, they're saying it for themselves, right?
It's like those clickbait videos where it's like how to get 1 million subscribers on YouTube. And then you go to their
channel. Yeah.
They've
got nothing.
Like, 2000.
It's like, well, you don't trust like a skinny chef. Right. Don't trust the channel that doesn't have 1 million subscribers saying how to grow.
If you are a small creator, because I've made this mistake as well. Like, at first, I looked for advice, and you do find these videos that are like, oh, here's how you can increase your subscriber count. And then they, you know, they recommend things like, oh, sub for sub. You know, like commenting or like posting your videos where it isn't relevant and stuff like that. And it's like, look, all you're going to do is piss people off. And now, because YouTube have changed their terms of service, you might get your channel banned for doing sub for sub, which is also a garbage practice anyway.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if you're a small creator, just be careful and very discerning about what advice you accept. But someone like, for example, like going back to the YouTuber subreddit, yes, you've got a lot of posts from people who've just hit 50 subs, but you've also got occasionally people like Internet Historian or Eckhart's Ladder who go back into that subreddit and give good advice. So that is there. And yes, don't listen to a chef that can't cook. Listen to a chef that's got 3 Michelin stars, you know. Same thing with YouTube.
Yeah, exactly. I think the biggest advice is just like, just make good content. I see so many, you've sort of mentioned people spamming their videos everywhere, and you definitely see that. Especially if you go on like the YouTube help forums, like if you've got some kind of technical issue, you go into like any question that someone's asked, and there'll be like 5 people being like, guys, please check out my channel. And you go on it, and it's some dude like, rapping to like 7 subscribers, and he's awful. But it's like it's like if you just spent the time you'd spent spamming these forums to like actually improve your content.
Well, the amount of people who ask like, "Oh, why aren't I growing? I've been posting like for 1 week. Why haven't I seen success? Or like, why aren't my videos taking off?" And then you look at their channel, and it's just like Fortnite gameplay, where they're sat there with a shitty mic, a shitty camera.
Or no mic even sometimes.
Or no mic, just nothing. And it's like, well, what? Why do you think people will watch? So that's, I'd say that that is a bit delusional, because you're not even thinking like, what is it here that you're wanting people to watch? You know, you just assume right. that people will watch it just because you've uploaded it, right? Okay, maybe it's not delusional, yeah. but you need to be a bit more self-reflective, you know, if you really want to get somewhere.
There's, you reminded me earlier when you said the small guys being like, here's how you get big. There's sort of a really scummy sort of thing I've seen in some of those smaller communities where it'll be someone who's like, you know, 8 or 9,000 subscribers, pretty much the, you know, the Chad of the small YouTube community. And they'll like lord over everyone else, like this really creepy sort of, like, I remember I found this one channel once that was doing stuff where it was like, yeah, I'll shut you out in one of my videos, of one of my 8,000 subscriber videos, but you have to like and comment and share. Like, you have to do like 50 things just to get shouted out in this guy's video that'll get like 200 views. And it was, I don't know, it just really bothered me. And I'd see that a few times where, yeah, this guy's like, I don't even know what you call it, like Lord of the Flies sort of shit. Like, you're still, you're not hierarchy. Big, but they're like the...
You're big among
small commentary
you're
hierarchy.
A big fish in a small pond. Basically,
you know what I think it is? Yeah. I think it's the same thing that happens when you become a manager of a grocery store.
Yes, or like a restaurant or anything. You get promoted from the staff and become the manager. Then you're like, yeah, I'm the hot shit now. And it's like, dude, you manage a Wendy. Shut up. You know.
And those subs are probably bored anyway, dummy. My favorite, like, this is cruel, but do you ever look back at people who you were like around the same size as? At the time, who you felt like you were competing with, and they're still there, and you're like, okay, I feel good about myself.
Occasionally, occasionally, but mostly I understand why they haven't grown. Sometimes they're just sometimes they're just unlucky, though, which is also the case. But sometimes you look at them and, like, there are people that I look when I was a really, really small channel, like, you know, less than 100 subs. There were people that I were like, I really look up to this person, and they had a few thousand subs. And now I've vastly overtaken them, and they're at the same level. And now I kind of understand why.
Yeah.
I've also very, I guess it's kind of, well, this is a different topic, so maybe I shouldn't move on to this yet. But like, I've very quickly had to get over my, like, not, what's the word? Not necessarily.
You found success.
Not necessarily fanboying, but like going, oh my God, this big YouTuber is speaking to me. You know?
Yeah.
Right.
Like, you go from being just another guy, like, making content on the internet to being like a colleague. Or like,
or a CEO.
Yeah,
you know, you're in these. Yeah. You're now in these circles. Like at VidCon back in 2019. Oh, happy days! But like going to VidCon and just being able to meet like all of these people that like I've been watching, or maybe I haven't watching, but I've heard of them and they're quite big, and like they know who I am, and I'm just like, oh my God, oh my God! But you kind of have to get over that as well, because after a while you come across as weird if you keep doing that. But I've also had that happen to me as well. People have kind of fanboyed out over me, and I'm kind of like, hey, thank you very much. Because like it's kind of awkward, because you're like, I appreciate it, but it's also, you know, it's almost like somebody's coming on too strong, and you're not quite sure how to react to it, because you can't be like, look, mate, just fuck off. That's rude. Yeah. You know,
the worst thing is when you realize then, like, oh, that's what I've said. Like,
yep. That's what when I'm you realize.
Yeah.
Oh, I've been that guy.
To kind of pull up some things out of like every different kind of segment of that segment, I guess. With the first one you mentioned is like kind of looking back on creators that used to be in your level of audience colleague, I guess.
Mm.
And I kind of agree with that. Like, there are some podcasts I would say that I look back on and we're kind of like pulling similar listens and stuff that we've kind of overtaken at this point. And while I do agree that I can kind of see why some of them haven't grown, I also kind of think that there's a place for the quaint little channels and podcasts and stuff where it's like, it's cool that they have their core little audience. And even if they don't grow, they're doing something creative and interesting that I like.
Yeah.
So
when I said that, I wasn't trying to shit on.
I don't think any of you guys were.
I just mean more like people who I'm like, I would see their content and use that as like a challenge almost. So it's like, I know I can do better than this person who's got a couple hundred subs already. Like, this is back when I had like 20 subscribers. I was like, mm-hmm. I know I can do better than this person with like 300 subscribers. Like I feel like I've got that in me. And then
yeah.
I guess I proved myself right. And that was just sort of vindicating.
Yeah, but on the other side of that coin, like there are also like a lot of creators that like, you know, because obviously I'm not a big YouTuber by any means, but like there are a lot of channels.
Fucking should be though.
Yeah, fucking
no.
Get out.
But like a lot of the creators that like, you know, I think it was like when I had like 15 or 20 subs, they had like 15 or 20 subs. And like now, you know, like where I'm at and where they're at, they're still like around that area. Like they're growing, but like to me, like I'm like, you know, because they make good shit. Like there's absolutely no reason for them like not to be yeah. bigger. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the thing is, it's been like consistent. Like, you know, ever since then, it's like, oh, they're gonna blow up any day now, but then they don't. And at that kind of makes you realize that like YouTube really is like a game of like strategy mixed with luck and perseverance and just fucking laying your balls on the table and like giving everything to it. And that also kind of makes me self-reflect. It's like, damn, I don't know like how much longer I could do that. You know, cause obviously I'm still not happy with where I am in terms of just growth. So it's like, I can't even imagine like, you know, still making stuff of that caliber and being at that size. I don't know how there's also like a certain respect that's to be had for the
Doplex.
Sorry,
Doplex, you died.
Oh, I did.
Yeah, you just completely cut out for like fuck. 5 seconds.
All right. Well, basically, what I said was, I don't know. It's in the recording. Just agree or disagree.
Yes.
Thanks.
Yes.
All right.
Okay. Maybe.
Yeah, like talking about sort of the YouTube game, the problem is, you know, small YouTubers do sometimes put it down to like the ones who haven't gotten big yet after years of trying, they go, oh, it's, you know, because we're unlucky, we haven't hit the algorithm. A lot of the time it is because their content isn't interesting, it isn't well made, and it's not stuff people want to see. But even if you do make content that's interesting and good and that people might want to see, sometimes, yeah, there is luck involved, unfortunately. You can't just have luck. You need the hard work, but you can't just have the hard work. You need luck as well.
Right.
Like, for example, I mean, Cynic Snacks, for example, makes fantastic content and has been for a while. And he really only hit the algorithm like this year because he started to make videos on stuff that was more recognizable.
Right.
And that gave him a massive boost. But he had that great content already there. So that here's the thing. You're very rarely going to blow up from just one video. It's one video, like for example, my Sierra Burgess video, but then you need to have other content there that people can then go and watch, and then like YouTube will promote backlog. That as well, and then it kind of snowballs a bit.
Yeah, the worst thing you could do is blow up on like your second video because you'll get like nothing because there'll be no other content for people to watch.
Yeah, that's true. Well, the only people that blow up after one or two videos are like usually plants, let's be honest.
Oh, yeah.
Like YouTube plants.
Like hibiscus.
As much as aren't any, but you know they are.
Hibiscus.
Oh, there's tons.
Yeah.
What was that?
Yeah.
What was the name of that woman? Yeah. She had like she made videos about her living in like a trailer or something in the middle of the desert. Or
oh,
whatever.
That's right.
And
who was
that? She had like two videos, and they had like a million views each.
Yeah.
And like
the van life thing.
Yeah, and it's like, come on, she's a plant. There's no.
Yeah.
Why else?
Does she still get like? Does she still make video? Because I remember like when that happened. Everyone was like talking about her, and then she disappeared. I don't know if she's still making videos.
What was her name?
People stopped talking about her, so I don't know if the plant worked.
I cannot remember her name.
Girl in van with too many subscribers. Just Google that.
I feel like girl in van videos and like travel videos are that's not that specific though. There's like billions of them,
right? But
a lot of them are really popular.
Yeah, but there was like one specific. Like,
even my mom's trying to do that.
It's cool.
Everyone has a travel channel.
Everyone's subscribed to Lars's mom.
What's your mom's address?
I think I found her. I think this is the one. I'll post a link in the Discord.
My mom or just the channel that you were talking about? Oh,
both.
Oh yeah, that's her. That's her.
Yeah, because
she uploaded like. What? No, it was one video she'd uploaded and it got like 10 million views and she had like a million subscribers. It's like, come on, YouTube, you really expect us to be that organic?
Oh, she still gets views. She doesn't upload very often.
She gets way more views. Yeah. Wow.
No, her last upload was a month ago.
But that's an anomaly, though. We can't really, in terms of like success on YouTube, we can't really really rely on or at the same time complain about YouTube picking people.
Right.
Even though sometimes they clearly do, just as they sometimes smack people down for a variety of reasons, even though they say they don't.
Yeah.
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 I do, I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on this. I do believe that if you make good, genuinely good content, inevitably you will find success on YouTube. It might take a lot longer than other people, but I do feel like if it is good, it will find a place sooner or later.
Yeah.
I want to say yes to that.
Yeah. It depends.
I'm not 100% on it.
Yeah, it really depends.
Some people obviously do get fucked over and probably, you know, quit or die in obscurity, same as anything. But yeah, it definitely feels like if you make solid content that, like you say, like Cynics Next did, you know, if it appeals to a sizable enough audience and it's good content, you've got a good back catalog and, you know, thumbnails and titles and stuff are good, I feel like sooner or later, it's going to pop.
Yeah.
I'm going to go ahead and completely disagree with you on that.
Okay.
Because the thing is, like, I'll occasionally go on some of the subreddits on YouTube that kind of have content that's good, but it's pretty low subscription. And the thing is that you're right if you also have a good bit of luck. But I do feel like for every one channel that does something really well, like, for example, Cynical Reviews does Cynical Reviews really well.
Mm.
There's probably like 9 or 10 other channels that just, they have good movie reviews and they have everything set up, but something doesn't click. They didn't link it the right place and they didn't win the lottery when it comes to the algorithm. Mm. And it just never works.
Yeah. What's that thing you always say, Lars? That I always try to quote, but I never get it right. Opportunity.
Oh, when opportunity meets pepperoni.
Yeah, when opportunity meets pepperoni. I think that ever since Lars said that always like that's always like in the back of my mind when I think about shit like this, because it's true. You know, like a lot of the time you think, you know, it is mostly, you know, based off one thing, but it can just be a plethora of things that need to meet at like a cross street, you know, to go out to lunch. And just kind of talk about how they're going to spend the rest of their life together. You know, you got Mrs. Opportunity, you got Mr. Pepperoni, you got some other people.
Preparation.
Yeah, and then they're all just kind of there, and then it turns into something great, turns into a sitcom airing only on ABC.
I think what you said earlier, CJ, about finding that, I always look at it as like a Venn diagram between the content you want to make and the content the audience wants to make. And try and like hitting that in the middle. That's because you can't go too far in either direction. If you just make content other people want to see, you'll be miserable and your content will suck. If you just make what you want to make, it'll be incredibly obscure and no one will click it and then you'll feel bad about it. So there's that middle ground to hit, which, yeah, like you say, some people don't. Some people just chat, like a lot of these new YouTubers, they'll be like, I'll just do Fortnite because Fortnite's popular, without like sort of looking into why people enjoy that.
That's the extreme end of doing what people want to see, because yes, people want to watch Fortnite. There is, like, it gets a lot of views. Everyone's talking about it, but there's also so many other people doing it that your chances of breaking out in that field are, they're not zero, but they're minuscule.
So
there's also a sweet spot where you have to find something that's people are interested in, but has not been covered enough for there still to be demand in it.
Mm.
Fortnite's at the extreme end of that. At the other end, you've got something, I don't know.
Gooning.
Trying to think of something Gooning. Yeah, well, yeah, goon hey, caves, there's a demand for that.
How to set up your Goon Cave.
How to set up your Goon Cave. Yeah, I don't know.
By Lioness Tech Tips.
Just just something that nobody's interested in, which maybe nobody's covered, but like there's a reason for that. You know, so it really is about finding that sweet spot.
100%.
No, absolutely. I genuinely have no idea how you would start like a gaming channel in 2021. Like,
yeah.
I feel like it's established at this point, right? Like Game Grumps and friggin', you know, all these other people have been doing it for so long. How could you convince someone, hey, watch my 30-minute video of me playing Super Mario Sunshine from a creator with 3 subscribers? Like,
yeah.
I just don't know how you could do that anymore.
You have to do something particularly unique or interesting with it. Like, how to speed run this section really quick, or how to get this in this game, or
yeah,
no, exactly.
Not just quote funny moments that you and your mates laugh at in Discord, because that's not going to cut it on YouTube. It's got to be, like, for example, I don't know, someone like Soviet Womble does it really well, or at the other end, you got somebody like Killian, the Killian Experience, who makes videos on video games, but they're not, like, just gameplay videos. They're, like, highly edited comedic content, or, like, you know, Girlfriend Reviews, for example. There are ways of breaking into being a gaming YouTuber, and, like, for example, Girlfriend Reviews also streams, so they're very successful at that as well, but they did that on the back of their YouTube success. The problem is you can't just go into it being like, I'm going to upload 10-minute or 30-minute compilations of just unedited gameplay and people will be interested, because you can't do that anymore. You could do that back in, like, 2008 when the only people doing it were, like, Darkside and that. The only people doing it were, like, Darkside Phil, you know?
Yeah.
Because there weren't enough people doing it, but now it's just not an option. But it's not impossible to break into the genre as a whole. Same with movie reviews, right? There are ways of doing it, but unfortunately, a lot of people that want to do it or try to do it aren't very good at it.
Yeah.
And they don't do anything new or interesting or original or really bring enough of themselves into it. So they're never going to stand out. But it is not impossible.
Movie reviews are tricky in particular, I think, because the nature of the beast is that I think when it comes to YouTube reviewers that I admire, for example, I Hit Everything is a classic example of that.
Mm-hmm.
He has a whole body of work behind him. So when I listen to a review that he does, I know where he's coming from because I know what he thinks about other projects.
There's like an established cinematic universe already.
Yeah. And to break into movie reviews, I imagine, is particularly tricky today because I don't have that. When, like, movie reviewer 123 signs up for YouTube, I don't know where he's coming from when he gives something an 8 out of 10. Like, that doesn't mean anything to me.
Yeah.
I think what CJ said is, it was kind of, when I was saying before about breaking into YouTube video games, I specifically meant the sort of Game Grumps Let's Play style.
Oh, I got you.
I think anything that, but you made the great point that I think if you're a small YouTuber, the best way to break into any of those things, including say movie reviews, would be to create a video providing information about a topic within that sphere that you might not otherwise know.
Mm.
So like a review of a movie is like, again, very opinion-based, very, you know, like you say, Elijah, like, oh, I don't care what this guy has to say. I don't know where he's coming from. I don't know his history. I don't know him as a voice that I trust. But if you did something like, oh, here's breaking down this scene in this popular movie or explaining the ending to some popular art house film that's, you know, blowing up right now or something, those sort of things, that's like tangible information that you'll trust. You know, if the thumbnail and the title look legit, you'll be like, all right, I trust you, small YouTuber, to inform me on this topic. And then I think off the back of that, that's when you could, you know, set up your reviews and everything.
Or start with something else, right? You know,
start with something else.
Get popular doing something else, and then you can kind of like,
yeah, so I'm saying,
like my mind always goes to like, you know, like obviously Game Grumps, like, yeah, they started a long time ago, but you know, Ego Raptor was big on his own, and then did that. Same with like Oni Plays, you know, like they all kind of started from somewhere and then kind of transitioned into that, and they already had like an established fan base that were willing to, you know, go over there. And I feel like what the thing is, like, if you have like a decent number of viewers, people are going to watch because like having that number of viewers almost like validates it. So it's a lot easier to like bring in a new audience.
Absolutely.
So I think that's the best way to
do it. There are different ways you can do it, basically. So I Hit Everything, for example, he was making videos for quite a long time, you know, including his search for the worst stuff before he sort of blew up and got big. And so when he started reviewing more mainstream stuff like, I don't know, The Emoji Movie or Suicide Squad or Star Wars, for example, he already had a lot of movie-based videos out already. So people knew what his opinions were on stuff and so were interested in what he had to say about those things. The other way you can do it, which I think is really the key to how I sort of blew up in the first place, is that something is trending at the moment, like, let Sierra Burgess is a Loser in my case, or The Last Jedi, Star Wars, another big example. People go and see the movie, and they hate it, but they can't put their finger on why, and they want someone to basically explain to them why it's bad, or they want to watch people shit on it for, like, enjoyment.
Yeah.
So they basically actively search these videos, because this is what I've seen, is that if somebody watches a movie like Tall Girl, they will watch 5-6 videos of people shitting on it, if that's what you're doing. If you're laughing at it, if you're making fun of it, if you're taking the piss out of it, if you're insulting it, because it's comedy, and it sort of validates their opinion, but also lets them have a good time, because it's like they're watching it with...
It's kind of cathartic.
Yeah, like, it's cathartic, and it's like they're watching it with somebody else who can laugh at it with them. So that's one way that, I mean, that's, I guess, how I was successful in the first place, and that's why... Because now, when a movie like that comes out, people ask me to do it because they want me...
Yeah.
At the end of the day, it's people, they want critics to validate their own opinion. So then, when a critic, like, for example, this happened to, say, Ralph the Movie Maker, it also happened to IHE as well. Ralph the Movie Maker made a video on The Joker where he really didn't like that movie, thought it was really bad, and he got quite a backlash from that because he wasn't validating people's opinions. So it is, I mean, okay, he was also making a lot of bad arguments, right? But what I'm saying is people watch the kind of movie reviews that, like, I make, the longer pieces, people watch them a lot of the time for validation. Because if they just want to know quickly, like, whether to watch a film or not, they can watch somebody like, I don't know, Jeremy Jarms.
Just go on IMDb or something.
Quickies from Your Movie Sucks.
Quick reviews, you know. But when they want to know in depth why this is bad or why it's good, on the opposite case, they'll come to people like me. And it is a different kind of content, and you have to be good at making that. If you're trying to, because I did at one point, and this is, I guess, kind of a nugget that I can share with you. At one point in my YouTube career, this is before I was making money, but I decided, okay, I'm not getting much success at the moment. Why don't I try and review films as they're out in the cinemas? So I made a video on The Happy Time Murders, and I made a video on Slender Man as it was out in cinemas. And actually, what I quickly realized is that there's a lot of people doing that, like literally hundreds of thousands of people will go home, will watch a movie, they'll go home, they'll turn on their camera, they'll record a 10-minute quote review of their thoughts of the movie, upload it to YouTube as a movie review, and then all of those movie reviews will get buried.
Yeah.
So trying to do movie reviews that way, I would say that's not a good idea, and it's not a good way to break into it. Also because I'm in the UK, right? And a lot of movies will come out in the US a couple of weeks or even a month before they come out in the UK. So if I can't see them, I can't even make reviews of them. So by the time I get around to watching them, there's already tens of thousands of reviews on them. So it's not going to stand out. So I would say that kind of review is extremely hard to break into if that's what you want to do. If you're not already a big established name like Jeremy Jarms, Chris Stockman, Red Letter Media, for example, you're probably going to get lost in the fog, really.
Yeah.
But if you make sort of longer form content that presents you basically take a side, as it were, where you explain why a thing is good or why a thing is bad, or you write an essay about a video essay about a particular aspect of the movie or whatever, that's much more likely to stand out from the crowd. So if you want to be a movie or media YouTuber, that's what I'd recommend doing.
All right.
I want to fill a niche.
Yeah.
By the way, we are getting into overtime at this point, and we can keep going if we want, but for people who are listening to this as the mainline episode, we are cutting things at 90 minutes apiece, and we'll probably continue talking for a few more minutes. If you want to go to our Patreon at patreon.com/T1podcast, get bonus episodes of the podcast, early listening privileges, bonus content for each of the guests during overtime,
and a kiss on the cheek.
Pictures of Laz's bows.
A funny role in the Discord, a patron-only chat, and more.
A kiss on the
What's that URL, Duplex?
Patreon.com/T1podcast.
That's patreon.com/T1podcast.
CJ, we'll keep going if you want, by the way, but thank you very much for joining us. I actually noticed in the DMs that we had been talking about this way back in April 2019. So it's good to finally circle back around. I really like your reviews. I appreciate you as a content creator, and I'm glad you came on the show, bud.
Oh, thank you very much.
Lovely having you here.
Oh, yeah, thank you very much. It's been very good Gregor being here, just to add to actually to one thing, we were talking about like 2021 goals or things that we want to do. I've decided that if I get asked to do like a podcast or if I get asked to do something with somebody, I am going to try and say yes. So
you're going to be like Jim Carrey's the yes man.
You guys are one of the first recipients of that.
Awesome. We awesome. Helped kick off your New Year's resolution.
Sweet.
Thanks for your pity, man.
where can people find you?
So I'm on YouTube at Cynical Reviews. I should be the first one that comes up. I have a little dog avatar and the background is blue. Shouldn't miss me. I'm also on Twitter at Cynical_CJ. I also stream on Twitch, Cynical Reviews Official, because some absolute fuck nugget had already taken Cynical Reviews. That really annoyed
bitch.
Me. I know, right?
You're listening.
Yeah, that's where you
fuck
can find
you.
Me.
Awesome. You can also find him on Pornhub at Goon Cave Reviews.
We weren't going to talk about that.
He pulls the sword out of his anus and dances with it in the wind underneath the moonlight.
That's pretty good, right?
Sure.
Okay, cool. Awesome.
Maybe for Voldo right. or something?
Yeah, yeah.
Never played Soul Calibur.
Voldo is pretty pretty sexual.
Yeah.
But we'll get into that later. I want to discuss the sexual anatomy of Voldo.